Namaskar.
The 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Those of you have to type in turn it to the 14th chapter. We may not be able to discuss the whole chapter because it is a long chapter. But the 14th chapter is called as Gunatraya Vibhaga Yoga, the three modes of material nature. Now, in general, whenever any person follows any spiritual path, whether it be Hinduism, Christianity, Islam, or even a spiritual path which is soulless and godless, like Buddhism. Now, Buddhism doesn't believe in a soul, doesn't believe in God, but still it's considered spiritual. So, every path will think that path is the best path, and the followers will claim our path is the best path. So now when we practice Krishna consciousness, how do we objectively understand what is who status? Or are we just another sectarian group just because we are Krishna devotees, so we say our path is the greatest path? The Bhagavad Gita does not encourage the sectarianism. Bhagavad Gita gives us objective criteria by which one can evaluate one's own spiritual advancement. And one can also understand where others are positioned. So, one of the objective criteria that Bhagavad Gita gives us is this concept of the three modes of material nature. No, there is nothing like this in any of the world's religions. No, the analytical classification of this material world and people within it based on objective universal criteria. And all religions classify people between believers and non-believers. No, if you believe, like Christianity, Islam, these religions, if you believe Jesus is the only way, if you believe Muhammad is the only way, then you are delivered. And if you don't believe, then you are going to go to hell. So, the Christians say, you are going to go to hell. The Muslims say, we will help you on the way to hell. We will send you there faster. Of course, I am not talking about all Muslims like that. But there are fundamentalist Muslims who speak like that, and they have Quranic verses to support that. But Bhagavad Gita doesn't speak like that. It doesn't say that anybody who calls themselves a devotee of Krishna is going back to God and everybody is going to go to hell. No, the Bhagavad Gita says that there are qualities which determine one's, which also express one's consciousness. What determines one's destination is not just a so-called claim of faith. Anybody can say, I believe in Krishna, I believe in Jesus, I believe in Muhammad. Now, if you believe, even in the Bible it is said, you shall be known not by your words, but by your works. What is your life? So, our consciousness is expressed through our qualities and our behavior. And we will go back to Godhead when we have developed a divine consciousness. And how we will develop the divine consciousness is not just a sentiment. Yes, one day I will wake up and I will have love for Krishna. Yes, it will happen gradually if we follow the process. But there is a process. And along the process, there are landmarks. Now, the three modes talk about more or less material landmarks. When we talk about Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu given by Jiva Rupa Goswami and elaborated by Jiva Goswami in his Durgam Sangamanitika, there, the nine series of devotional service are described, where we will achieve Krishna Prema at the end. So, in this chapter, Krishna talks about these three modes of material nature. That means, how material, when somebody is situated in material nature, what is the situation? How can we understand that? And what is it that determines the situation? That is what these modes describe. So, we'll recite the verses together. You can recite as much as you can, and then like yesterday, you can read the translations one by one. So, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha Parambhu... Together. Parambhuya Pravakshami Jnananam Jnanam Uttamam Yajyatva Munaya Sarve Param Siddhim Ito Gataha. Translation.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead, again I shall declare to you this Supreme Wisdom, the best of all knowledge, doing which all the sages have attained the Supreme Perfection.
So, Param Bhuyaha. Bhuyaha means again. Param is supreme knowledge. I am going to speak this to you again. Why I say again? Because in this knowledge of three modes of material nature culminates in devotional service, pure devotional service. Prabhupada would often quote that verse 14.26. Mam chayo avyabhicharena bhakti yogena sevate. So, this section is a part of the jnana section of the Bhagavad Gita. And the Bhagavad Gita is sometimes classified as being divided into three parts. The first six chapters talk about karma. The second six chapters talk about bhakti. The third six chapters talk about jnana. Correct? Wrong. No. All the 18 chapters of Bhagavad Gita talk about bhakti. The first six chapters talk about how karma culminates in bhakti. The middle six chapters focus exclusively on bhakti. And the last six chapters talk about how jnana culminates in bhakti. So, one aspect of jnana is to analyze. The intellectuals like to analyze things. So, analyze material nature. But your analysis is not what is going to purify. You know, one of the Vedic Acharyas describes that logic is useful. But logic cannot create experience and logic cannot substitute for experience. Logic can only examine the contents of experience. That means, though we chant Hare Krishna and experience ecstasy, we do worship of deity and we experience some sublime joy. Logic cannot give us that joy. So logic cannot create experience. Logic cannot substitute for experience. But logic can only examine the contents of experience. So, now somebody, maybe just like the Sahajiyas. Sahajiyas are those pseudo devotees who claim to be very spiritually advanced while at the same time breaking all the regulative principles. So, now to evaluate the such people, we need logic. Somebody claims that, I am thinking about Radha Krishna and I am absorbed in Radha Krishna's pastimes. As a person is having affairs with mundane women. Then somebody, then we can make logic, we can examine. That, can this person really be having spiritual experience? So logic can help us to examine the contents of experience. But logic itself cannot create experience. Logic cannot substitute for experience. So here what Krishna tells us in this whole chapter is by logic we can analyze who is in goodness, passion, ignorance. Of course, logic and scripture, both together. But then at the end, if we ourselves want to go beyond the experience of the three modes to the divine experience of bhakti, then one has to take shelter of bhakti. So this is jnana which culminates in bhakti. So generally speaking, people think that bhakti is for sentimental people. Now, sentimental people. So people have this notion that yoga is for the austere people, jnana is for the intellectual people, karma is for the hard-working people, and bhakti is for the sentimental people. So, this is the idea. But, this idea is not correct. If karma, bhakti is just for the sentimental people, then why have not just Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharya, but all the Vaishnava Acharyas have written so many books. Ramanavacharya, Madhvacharya, recently I had gone to Bangalore, so there we had gone to one institute of the Madhva Sampradaya. There was one this big book. And I said, it is Bhagavad Gita. I said, Bhagavad Gita is so big. And I said, Bhagavad Gita, chapters 1 and 2 only. So, it was Madhvacharya's commentary, followed by Vyasatirtha's commentary, on Madhvacharya's commentary, followed by Vyasatirtha's, followed by Jayatirtha's commentary, on Vyasatirtha's commentary, and Madhvacharya's commentary. Followed by Vijayadhvaja's commentary on Vyasatirtha, Jayatirtha and Madhvacharya's commentary. So, every verse had four commentaries. And like that, this book was just two chapters of Bhagavad Gita. And all of it was in Sanskrit. So, why bhakti is just for sentimental people, then how are the Vaishnava Acharyas written so many books? You know, our own Gaudiya Vaishnava Acharyas have, at least what we have existing right now, we have more than 2500 books. And our Sampradaya has been only for 500 years. Of course, the essence, the message is eternal, but the Sampradaya was manifested in the material world just 500 years ago. So our Acharya has written so many books. So, bhakti is not just for sentimental people. Actually, bhakti is the process by which we experience divine sentiments. But bhakti integrates karma, jnana, yoga within its fold. And all these paths culminate in bhakti. So Krishna has already told in 9.34 that ultimate conclusion of bhakti. Man mana abha mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskuru. So that's why Krishna is telling here, bhuyaha, I am speaking it again. Param bhuyaha pramakshami jnanana jnanam uttamam. The best of all knowledge. Now the best of all knowledge is not the knowledge of three modes of material nature. The best of all knowledge will be how by bhakti we can transcend the three modes of material nature. But Krishna doesn't just tell bhakti is the greatest. And sometimes people wonder if bhakti is the greatest. Why does Krishna talk about other paths? Actually, the most effective glorification is glorification by comparison. If somebody says, Times of India, the world's highest selling paper, and we have a circulation of 7 million. Maybe 7 million is too small. 100 million, whatever. You may say, okay, 100 million. And if somebody says, okay. So, Deccan Herald, 1 million. Indian Express, 3 million. Hindustan Times, 4 million. Economic Times, 500,000. And you have bar graphs showing this. And then you have Times of India, 100 million. So, then that 100 million registers in our mind. Isn't it? So, glorification by comparison is the most effective. That's why Krishna talks about other paths so that the glory of bhakti becomes registered powerfully in our minds. Jnananam jnanam uttam yad jnatva munaya sarve. When the munis, they know about this param siddhim itogataha. So, they will attain the supreme destination. Next verse. Idam jnanam upashritya mamsa dharmyam agataha sarge pino pajayante pralayena vyathanti cha.
By becoming fixed in the knowledge, one can attain to the transcendental nature like my own. Thus established, one is not born at the time of creation or disturbed at the time of dissolution.
Idam jnanam upashritya. Krishna uses a very significant word. Upashritya means take shelter of. Krishna is not just saying one who studies this knowledge, one who understands this knowledge, one who takes shelter of this knowledge. So for us, philosophy is not just meant for memorizing so that we can speak. Yes, we can speak also. But philosophy is meant for taking shelter. Because philosophy, especially when it is spoken by Krishna, is also a manifestation of Krishna. So just as we take shelter of Krishna through His holy name, just as we take shelter of Krishna through the deities, like that we can take shelter of Krishna through the philosophy that He has given. So, idam jnanam upashritya. So, one who takes ashray of this jnana. So, this jnana is bhakti jnana. It is not just mundane jnana. When he takes shelter of this jnana, what happens to him? He says, three things. Mamsa dharmyam agata. He will attain nature like mine. That is spiritual nature. And if he attains the spiritual nature, what will happen? He will not be disturbed by material ups and downs. Sarge pinopajayante. So that means, next time again he won't have to take birth. Sarga is birth, creation. Again he won't have to take birth. And not only that, this time also when he will have to die, pralaye na vyathanti cha. He will not be disturbed at the time of death. Why? Because the disturbance at the time of death is primarily because of attachment to the body. If we are detached from the body, then the pain at the time of death is much, much lesser. Now suppose a person has purchased a brand new car and is driving in the car. And at a signal, suddenly somebody hits the bumper. He gets so angry, feels like beating up that person. There's a small scratch to the bumper and nothing has happened to him. Why? Because there's attachment. But imagine this person has sold the car and now he is riding in a separate car and is walking on the footpath. And then he sees that same car being knocked down by a truck. Okay, the car is knocked down by a truck. He doesn't feel disturbed. Why? Because there's no attachment to the car. So like that, as long as we have attachment to the body, we'll be disturbed by small, small things that happen to the body. But once we have developed detachment from the body, we have offered the body back to Krishna. We have returned the body back to Krishna. So then we have no disturbance. So, you know, one of our sannyasis, Sarvada Maharaj, he got Parkinson's disease. And then he decided, when he came to know that it is Parkinson's disease, he decided to do the Prayavrata. Prayavrata means, it is the vow of fasting to death. So then the devotees told him, there is no need for you to do this. So he gave a very amazing reply. He said, you know, my body is meant for serving Krishna. If I cannot serve Krishna with this body, then why do I have to maintain the body? So devotee for him, he's not going to, oh, I'm going to die. He's no fear of that. Not concerned that, oh, I'm being tortured or I'm fasting, I'm starving. Simply thinking, yeah, this body was meant for serving Krishna. Now with the Parkinson's, he was old also. I'll not be able to serve Krishna anymore. So what is the use of maintaining the body? So sarge pralayena yathanticha. Once one has taken shelter of this divine knowledge, one will not be disturbed, even at the moment of death. Then Krishna talks about how, so what is this knowledge? Before talking about the three modes of material nature, he talks about how this creation begins in two verses. Mama yonir mahat brahma tasmin garbham dadhamyaham sambhava sarva bhutanam tato bhavati bharata.
The total material substance called Brahman is the source of birth, and it is that Brahman that impregnates, I impregnate, making possible the birth of all living beings, O son of Bharata.
Yes. Mama yoni. Yoni is womb. So, Mahad Brahma. So, now in the Vedic culture, just by understanding language, one cannot understand scripture's message. The word Brahma generally means God. But here Krishna is using the word Brahma to refer to material nature. Mama Yonir Mahad Brahma. The great Brahma. The great Brahma is not the all-pervading Brahma Jyoti. Because Bhagavan will not improve. Impregnate Brahma Jyoti. Actually, is going to impregnate material nature. Tasmin garbham dadamyaham. So, in the garbha, I give, what do I give? I give the seed. So, many times, there are Sanskrit scholars who think that they are better even than the devotee acharyas. Why? Because they think we know Sanskrit better. Yes, it's good to know Sanskrit if one can learn Sanskrit. But, the knowledge of God consciousness was not revealed just by language. It is revealed by bhakti. So, you know, in the from the West, when first people came to India, the Western scholars, they started learning Sanskrit and studying Hinduism, Hindu scriptures. Then they have made a complete mess of misinterpreting scriptures. The Max Müller is considered the father of Indology. In India, there are so many places, there is Max Müller Bhavan, they call it. But actually, you know, for example, you know, there will be somebody, there will be a word like, say, you have to, that yogi has to cut the senses in order to achieve transcendence. So cut the senses, you know, go damana. So then what this Max Müller will do is, he will take go and he will, instead of using the word go to mean senses, say go means cow. Therefore, to attain transcendence, you have to kill cows. So, like this, he has done so much misinterpretation. So yes, just by studying language, even from a mundane point of view, suppose in German, some book of medicine is there, which is very insightful about how medicine is, this particular medicine system can cure people. Now, consider two personalities who translate this book into English. One is a Britisher who learns German very academically, systematically, and becomes a scholar in German. And then he translates that book into English. And the other is a German doctor who has treated patients for a whole lifetime using that book of medicine. And he has learned English. And now he translates into English. Now he may not be an English scholar as compared to this person who is both an English and German scholar. But whose translation will be more valuable from a practical point of view? The doctor's, isn't it? Because he has lived, he has applied that knowledge. So similarly, the Vedic scriptures are meant not just for information. They are meant for application and transformation. So, the acharyas have applied that knowledge. and they have transformed their own hearts, they have transformed other people's hearts. So therefore, when they translate the books, now from the grammatical point of view, from the linguistic point of view, even if they are not perfectly accurate, they will bring the desired effect of transforming people's hearts. So Devamrata Maharaj has written a book called Searching for Vedic India. He says, so the, he writes in that book, the Vedic wisdom is not revealed to those who are addicted to dictionary meanings. Just addicted to dictionary meanings. You cannot understand Vedic scripture by that. So Mama Yonir Mahat Brahma, that great Brahma. So how can material nature be called as Brahma? That is the Achintya Bhedavait philosophy. The material nature, because it emanates from Krishna, so in one sense it is not different from Krishna. No, even that, like there is a famous Upanishadic verse which Shankaracharya called as a Mahavakya. Sarvam Khalmamidam Brahma. Everything is Brahma. So how is that Brahma? That is Brahma because it is a manifestation of Brahma. It is the energy of Brahma. Sambhava Sarvabhutanam. All living beings become, they appear by that. Tato Bhavati Bharata. So the Lord impregnates, and when he impregnates, then the material nature manifests. Now Srila Prabhupada explains this verse based on our previous Vaishnavacharya's commentary in a very interesting way. I'll explain that after we recite the next verse. Sarva yonishu kaunteya murtaya sambhavantiya tasam brahma mahat yoni aham bija pradapita.
It should be understood that all the stages of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, and that I am the giving, I am the
seed-giving father. Yes. So, Prabhupada explains that when Krishna is telling, I am the seed-giving father, this refers to Lord Shiva. Because it is Lord Shiva who impregnates material nature. Material nature is Parvati Devi or Durga Devi. So, Durga Devi is material nature, Lord Shiva is the father. So, that's why Lord Shiva is called as Vishwanath. And there may be some scriptures which talk about Lord Shiva also as supreme. It's fine. Within the material world, he is supreme. So, Lord Shiva is never called as Ananta Koti Brahmanda Nayak. That is for Lord Vishnu only. So, actually in this material world, it is described that Lord Vishnu never comes in touch with the material world. So, Saha Aikshita, the Upanishad say. So, Lord Vishnu glances. And Shambhu is Lord Shiva. But Shambhu is also the name for the glance of Lord Vishnu. So, when the souls who are in the spiritual world, they want to come to this material world. So, the Lord glances at the spiritual world, and also those souls who from the previous creation have at the end of creation been withdrawn into the body of the Lord. They don't merge into the body of the Lord, but they stay in Sushupti at that time. So, then when the creation is to take place again, those souls who have entered into the cosmic form of the Lord, they are discharged out through the glance of the Lord. I mean, the glance of the Lord is called as Shambhu. And then they go into the womb of material nature. And from there the process of creation starts. So Krishna is saying, I am the seed-giving father. So Lord Shambhu, Lord Shiva himself is not the source ultimately. But he is the medium through which the creation takes place. So, in this way, the Vedic understanding is that nature is like our mother. And God is like our father. So we are all in a cosmic family. And in this family, all that we have to do is obey our parents. If we obey our parents will provide for our needs. But this place is not a home. You know, the Christian, Muslim idea, they also understand to some extent that this world is a place of misery. But their idea is still that, you know, if you obey God, then you will be happy in this life. And they have this whole concept of the second coming of Jesus. In Christians, second coming means Jesus will come again in the future, and at that time he will convert this world into the kingdom of God. Or in the Islamic tradition, they have the idea that in the future Allah will send a lashkar. That's why they have this lashkar-e-taiba and all that. They claim that we are that divine lashkar. So that lashkar will come, and that lashkar wipe the earth of all non-believers, and then the kingdom of Allah will come on this earth. But this is simplistic. You know, this world is always going to be temporary. It is never going to be eternal. So this understanding is not exactly based on their scriptures, and it's certainly not correct. This world is never going to be eternal. So, you know, based on this understanding of scripture, that if we worship God, this world will be so wonderful, so nice, so peaceful, then that this world is like a home and God is like our father. This was the understanding. But life in this world doesn't substantiate this understanding. So for example, now when Darwin proposed his theory of evolution, so at that time, you know, he said, so many people have told me that we can see God's benevolence in this world. So I can't see God's benevolence. I can't visualize how a creator could have created beings who delight in ripping other beings apart and feasting on their flesh. A tiger is in savage delight. He rips apart a deer and eats it. He says, and we see such brutality and cruelty, not just spread over nature, inherent in nature. He says, I can't see any benevolence in this world. So, he said, actually, this world is a place of cruelty, survival of the fittest. Of course, Prabhupada had a simple refutation for survival of the fittest. What was that? Even the fittest don't survive. But the point is, Darwin said, this world is not like a home. It's like a jungle. So, the Judeo-Christian idea is this world is like a home. And Darwin came and said, this world is like a jungle. The Vedic understanding is, this is not like a home, this is not like a jungle, this is like a jail. So in a jail, there is design. So we can see both these things in this world. We cannot. So the thieves will say, you can see so much design in this world. And Darwin and the atheists can't deny that. On the other hand, the atheists will say, you can see so much suffering in this world. And the naive religionists can't deny that. They have to admit that there is suffering in this world. So where is there a place in this world where we see both design and suffering? That is a jail. So, just because there is design doesn't mean there is no God. Just there is design doesn't mean that this has to be our home. And just because there is suffering doesn't mean that there is no God. So these are two extremes. One thing that this world is like a happy home. The other thing, this is like a brutal jungle. No, this is like a jail where we have to liberate ourselves. So now Krishna describes what is it that binds us in this jail. Then he, so from this verse onwards, he starts describing the three modes of material nature. Sattvam rajastama iti guna prakriti sambhavan yajunti mahabaho dehe dehinam avyayam. So, three modes of it. Sattva, rajastama. What do they do? Nibadnanti, they bind. Mahabaho. Krishna is telling Arjuna, you may be very powerful, but you are also bound by these modes. No matter how powerful you are, these modes are even more powerful. Dehe, dehinam avyayam. This is a very interesting word. Avyaya. Avyaya means imperishable. That means this bondage in the material world is imperishable. An individual may become free and may go back. But the material world with his bondage will stay. Like an individual prisoner can become liberated and he can go out of jail. But the jail will stay on. So as devotees, you know, we also don't have illusions that we can make this world into a happy place. Certainly, we try to make this place as happy as possible so that we can practice devotional service. We don't want this world to be uncomfortable, because if it's too uncomfortable, too insecure, then we can't peacefully practice devotional service. So we need some amount of order, some amount of security. That is fine. But we cannot aspire for complete security. It's like, you know, we need to have some sort of order. And after our class, there will be prasadam ready for us. We don't know whether the prasadam is there. We don't have any management. We don't have a system. Then what will happen? Then we will not be, the class will think, oh, will prasadam be there or not? If prasadam is not there, what will I do? So we have to have some level of material arrangement. But we don't go about making big feasts every day and trying to have the best prasadam over here. Even devotees who become grahasthas, they want to have some basic level of security. But if one tries to just keep improving one's security more and more, there is no end to that. So as devotees, we make some basic arrangement for living as peacefully and as happily as is possible in this world. But we know that in spite of our best efforts, we cannot be ultimately peaceful and happy in this world. So our purpose of trying to create harmony and order in this world is so that we can get out of this world. It's not to just create harmony and order, because this is the jail. That's why avyaya, this world is eternal. Now what exactly are these modes? We have heard this word so many times. Modes are basically subtle forces that shape the interaction between matter and consciousness. That shape the interaction between matter and consciousness. So, the soul being spiritual has got nothing to do with matter. But when the soul comes to this material world with the intention of wanting to enjoy the material world, they just like when the cosmonauts go into outer space, they are given suitable dresses. So that they can interact with the atmosphere over there. They will give an oxygen cylinder and other protective gear. So like that, when the soul comes to the material world, he is given a particular kind of body. Now, the body is given not just to interact with the material world, but also to interact in the way which the soul desires to interact. So, the modes of goodness, passion and ignorance, they can be compared to, in one sense, infections. The soul originally, spiritually, will see everything from a transcendental perspective. But when the soul is covered by this material body, then depending on the mode that he is covered by, his perception gets distorted. His perception gets distorted, his desires get distorted, and accordingly, the actions get distorted. So, goodness is like a mild infection. You know, somebody has a little cough. Passion is like a relatively grave affliction. Suppose somebody has got, say, serious tuberculosis. You need to have a long treatment to get cured. And ignorance is like lethal anthrax. Completely paralyzed. So, basically they are infections. All three are infections. And all three are in need of being cured. But they are different degrees of infections. So, in the next three verses, Krishna describes how each of these modes bind. So, this is a very systematic chapter in verses. Of course, whole Bhagavad Gita is systematic. But sometimes, how it is systematic, we will not be able to understand it. Because the Vedic mind to which Krishna is speaking often thinks differently from the modern mind. So, but here how the chapter overview is. At first, Krishna gives the introduction of three modes and how the three modes bind. Then from verses 10 to 13, he will talk about how there is a competition between the modes. It's not that somebody is in goodness, somebody is passion, somebody is in ignorance. No, all these modes are there on all of us at different times. So then, Krishna in 11th verse will describe what are the symptoms when goodness is predominating in a person. In 12th verse, he will describe what are symptoms when passion is predominating. 13th he will describe what are symptoms when ignorance is predominating in a person. And then he describes what are the destinations. So he then from the verses 14 to 18, 19 basically, it is like destinations. What is going to happen? If a person dies in this particular mode, what are the destinations going to get? If he is living in that mode, what is the result that is going to happen? And ultimately, which are the planets or what are the directions in which his life will go? So, here Krishna starts by describing the mode of goodness. Tatra sattvam nirmalatvat prakashakam anamayam sukha sangena badnati jnana sangena chanagha. Yes.
The mode of goodness being purer than the others is illusionistic and it frees one from all sinful reactions. Those situated in that mode become conditioned by a sense of happiness and knowledge.
Tatra sattvam nirmalatvat. Nirmala. Mala means contamination. Relatively it is free from contamination. Tatra sattvam nirmalatvat prakashakam anamayam. So why is this free from contamination? Because it is illuminating, prakashakam and anamayam. It is free from sin. Sukha sangena badanati. Now if you see the first two lines, it appears the mode of goodness is very wonderful. It is free from contamination, it is free from sin, it is illuminating. No, it also binds. How does it bind? Sukha sangena badanati jnana sangena chanaga. It binds by happiness and by knowledge. So, people who are in the mode of goodness, Prabhupada used three examples. The poet, the philosopher and the scientist. So, these people, they are not dragged around by their desires. Oh, I have to earn this, I have to purchase a bigger house, I have to get a bigger car. They are not dragged around. They are relatively peaceful. And they contemplate a lot. And what happens, if we are in the mode of goodness, then mode of goodness creates a sense of superiority. All these people, they are running around here and there, doing this, doing that, doing so many things. I am satisfied. I am not like a fool running around like this. You know, in the spiritual path, basically, we have to give up our ego. Now, when we come to this material world, we come here to imitate Krishna. And we imitate Krishna by trying to acquire the six opulences of Krishna. So, in this world, if somebody is good looking, is a rupa, Krishna is the most attractive, then he can enjoy this world. Somebody has wealth, then he can enjoy this world. So, out of the six opulences, fame, beauty, strength and wealth. So, these four are used by people to imitate Krishna. And if even a devotee or a transcendentalist has this, he can use it in Krishna's service. But these four, nobody generally thinks of these four as signs of spiritual advancement. Somebody is wealthy, it's not necessary that we will think he is spiritually advanced. In Christianity, they have the idea that, you know, if you are wealthy, that indicates that God has blessed you. Wealth is a proof of God's grace. In Islam, they have the idea if you get capture power, then that means Allah has blessed you. So that's why Islam as a religion is more a search for political power than a search for spiritual truth. And actually, when they capture political power, that's why, you know, Pakistan. What is the meaning of Pakistan? The holy land. That is the meaning of Pakistan. Sacred land. So the land that was spilled with the blood of Hindus as we drove them out. And it became holy by the blood of the Hindus. I mean, so the idea is that, you know, that there in those religions, material wealth is considered as a gift of God. If you see what is Vaishnava Dharma, you know, Krishna says, Yasyaham anugranami harishyata dhanamishane. If I am merciful to you, I will take away all your material opulences. So, bhakti is transcendental. Now, of course, bhakti is the essence ultimately of Islam and Christianity also. And we see there many saints, with the Sufi saints in Islam, or there were the Benedictine monks in Christianity, who also renounced everything. There was St. Francis of Assisi. You know, he was so renounced that when they would eat food, they said, why should we use plates? You put the food on the ground and we eat it from the ground. He said, no, it will fix with mud. So, say, mud is sacred. So, we'll eat the mud also. So, there are people like that. But there is not mainstream Christianity. So, we are not here condemning any religion. Because in the way we speak about Islam or Christianity, we can speak so much like that about Hinduism also. Because there are so many things going on wrong within Hinduism also. But the principle we are talking about is how bhakti is transcendental. Bhakti is the essence of all religions and it is transcendental. So, but the difference within what we call as Hinduism and Christianity and Islam is that within Hinduism, the transcendental aspect has always been more emphasized. Whereas in the other religions, the mundane aspect has been more emphasized. So, Sukha Sangena Vadanati Jnana Sangena Chanaka. Such a materialistic person, how does he become bound? I was talking about the opulences. So, the first four opulences, nobody will think of a person having those opulences as spiritually advanced. But Jnana and Vairagya can create the illusion of advancement. If somebody has a lot of knowledge, people think, oh, he's very advanced. Somebody is very renounced, they think very advanced. It can be. Actually, Jnana and Vairagya can be a fruit of bhakti also. As it says, bhakti, vasudeva bhagavati, bhakti yoga prayojita, janayatya ashu vairagyam jnanam chedahaitukam. That in Krishna talks about, Sutta Goswami talks about this, parabhakti in 1.2.6 in the Bhagavatam, and 1.2.7 immediately says that jnana and vairagya result automatically from bhakti. So, it actually is very poetic words. What he is saying is that the soul is here, Krishna is here. And the union of the soul and Krishna takes place through bhakti. So, when the soul offers the bhakti of his heart to Krishna, this union of the soul and Krishna creates two children. Those children are Jnana and Vairagya. So, Jnana and Vairagya can be result of bhakti also. But, Jnana and Vairagya can be mistaken to be a substitute for bhakti also. When somebody doesn't have bhakti, he has Jnana and Vairagya and he thinks I am very advanced. So, like that, those who are in the mode of goodness, they have Jnana and relatively they have Vairagya. Because they are not pulled around the material desires. And they think we are very advanced. We don't have any need to take shelter of Krishna. And therefore, they stay in the material world. So that's why Krishna says even this binds. It binds by knowledge and happiness. Happiness means peacefulness over here. It's not the spiritual satisfaction that we are talking about. Then he describes about the mode of passion. Next verse. Rajo ragatmakam vidhi trishna sanga samudbhavam sannibadnati kaunteya vasangena dehina. So rajo ragatmakam vidhi. The word rag in Marathi means anger, but in Sanskrit it means attachment. Now, in our language we have ragi, which is different. So, raga means attachment. Rajo ragatmakam vidhi. There's a lot of attachment that is there in the mode of passion. And what happens? Then, what is the result of raga? See, when there is the raga which is in bhakti, the attachment to Krishna, that raga will take us to Krishna. But this raga takes us to Trishna. Trishna is desire. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Rajo ragatmakam vidhi trishna sanga samudvama. Trishna means actually not just desire, it is craving, intense craving. People are paranoid. Prabhupada explains that the most important characters of the mode of passion is sexual desire. So especially in youth, people are haunted by sexual desire. According to some surveys, I don't know how they did the survey, they found that people in youth, they can't read people's mind, maybe they asked them only. They said that generally people in their teenage years, in a minute they think five times about sex. So they think about that. Well, trishna is intense craving. Trishna sanga samudbhavam. And what happens? Tandibadnati kaunte. How does that bind? Because if we have desires, we can't fulfill the desires for free. So therefore, what do we have to do? Work. Karma sange dehina. So the people get bound to work. Now, if you see in modern society, like this question came in the camp also. The devotee was asking that question two, three times. He was asking the same question. If you become satisfied, then how will you be ambitious? How will you work hard? How will you enjoy? How will you not enjoy? How will you achieve? So, people in modern times don't think of satisfaction as a virtue. People think of satisfaction as a disqualification. You should be greedy. If you're not greedy, how can you be ambitious? So, Prabhupada explains later on this chapter that earlier times, the standard of advancement of society was in terms of goodness. That means the more society goes toward goodness, the more it is advanced. But in modern times, the standard of advancement is passion. So in passion, you know, somebody, people are proud. You know, I worked in this company for 21 years and I did not take leave even once. That means, you know, actually people think to be a workaholic is a virtue. But it's not a virtue. Yes, the other extreme is to be lazy and not do any work. That is certainly not recommended by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. So, Krishna is not recommending laziness. But Krishna, but what happens in the mode of passion? We work very hard, but that hard work is motivated only by material desires. Whereas a devotee, when he works hard, he is motivated by compassion. But karmi is motivated by passion. So if we are motivated by passion, Prabhupada, we won't get time to go to that purport today, but I will mention this. Prabhupada explains a very brilliant point. He says, if somebody is infected by the mode of passion, he thinks, if I earn money, then by earning money, I can fulfill my desires and I will become happy. But Prabhupada says that even if you earn money, you cannot become happy. Because money cannot free you from the mode of passion. Money will only increase the mode of passion. Only Krishna conscious purification can free one from the mode of passion. So, we have to understand that certain modes create certain mindsets. So, the characteristic of the mode of passion is trishna, craving. And craving for what? Craving for that which we don't have. So, that is a kind of disease which the mode of passion infects us with. And we are infected by that disease. The point is not whether I have a particular object or not. That is the external symptom of the disease. Just like if I have some disease in my body, I get a boil. And I get a rash and I want to scratch it. So at that time, what happens? I feel the solution, but the problem is scratching. But scratching is only the symptom, it's to relieve the symptom. Actually, the problem is the impurity in the blood or whatever disease is there. And only when I treat it, the rash will go away. So, similarly, when people are infected by the mode of passivity, I just want to get this new mobile. It has this video facility, it has this, it has that. I want to get a bike. You know, I have a Honda, I want a Splendor or a Charisma or whatever. I have a car, I have a Fiat, but I want a Mercedes. I have a flat, but I want a row house. So like that, people just want to, you know, even when the person is greedy, the nature of the mind is to see what one doesn't have. So, it's not a matter of how much I have, the nature of the mind is to see what I don't have. So, if a person is wealthy, I want to become the wealthiest person in Rourkela. You become the wealthiest person in Rourkela, I want to become the wealthiest person in Orissa. Then I want to become the wealthiest person in India. Then the wealthiest person in Asia. And the wealthiest person in the world. Then the wealthiest person in world history. Then you become history by that time. So actually the mode of passion, no matter how much we have, if we are infected by the mode of passion, it will make us see what we don't have. And it will make sure that we are dissatisfied. It will make sure that we are dissatisfied. So, that sort of dissatisfaction will never go away, no matter how much one achieves. And that's why it's just a path to frustration. You know, the success of Vedic civilization was that even a poverty-stricken person was satisfied. It's not that he was lazy. You know, the Brahmanas would work very hard. But they would accept voluntary poverty. Why? So that they could focus on spiritual life. The success of Vedic civilization, that was even a poverty-stricken person could be satisfied. The Sudama Brahman didn't want to ask anything for the Lord. And he went even when his wife insisted, not because he wanted to ask something, but he thought, I'll get to see Krishna. So, and he was not atypical of the Brahman in Vedic times. So Vedic civilization could keep even a poverty-stricken person satisfied. And the success in double quotes, of modern civilization is that it can keep the wealthiest person dissatisfied. Why? Because Vedic culture promoted the mode of goodness. And in mode of goodness, we can see what we have. See, the Kulavija Shridhar, satisfied, you know. I get food to eat. I have clothes. I have a roof over my head. What more do I need? Satisfied. But the mode of passion, you have a big, there was one, it's such a disgusting thing, there was one big multi-millionaire, billionaire, trillionaire, whatever he was. So he is like addicted to sex. So he made an advertisement that, you know, whichever woman, while I am having sex with her, I die with her, she will get my inheritance. So some 75,000 women applied to have sex with him. You know, what a kind of mindset. He's a wealthy prepared, imagine he's just, I can't even enjoy. The body grows old and sick. So, Krishna Sangha Samudbhavam, the desire will never go away. It will never go away. So in the mode of passion, we should not think that as devotees, we will improve our material life, then we will practice spiritual life. As we can improve our material life if we want to, but not at the expense of spiritual life. Especially for us, our morning program, if it is strong, it will force us to come to goodness. Because you cannot just sit and chant and dance and hear philosophy if you entertain the mode of passion. What about you? Do something practical. Do something practical. Why are you wasting so much time? But no, what we are doing is the most practical thing in life. Because that is what will bring the most practical result at the end of our lives. Otherwise, practically, everything people are going to lose which they acquire in the mode of passion. So, karma, the people get bound by karma. And in the mode of passion, mode of ignorance, how is the bondage? Tamas tvajnana jam vidhi mohanam sarvadehina pramadalasya nidrabhi annibasnati bharata. So the mode of ignorance looks very similar to the mode of goodness. Why? In the mode of ignorance, people are peaceful, inactive, but they are inactive because of laziness. So what happens is, actually this is a very interesting phenomena, how it is. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur, in one of the earliest books that he wrote called Bange Samajikta, Then he analyzes. You know, the Europeans, when they came to India, they would criticize the Indian culture. You people are so lazy, you don't do anything. So Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur says that actually, you know, there are karmendriyas and there are gyanendriyas. Brilliant analysis he gives. So he says that if you look at the animals, animals primarily their karmendriyas are active. And their gyanendriyas are meant only to assist the karmendriyas. Isn't it a tiger wants, his eyes are mainly to see where there is a prey to eat. And then, it'll run very fast. So he says that to the extent people are in animal consciousness, they think expertise in karmendriya and expertise in karma is progress. And to the extent a person is in the mode of goodness and a person is in human consciousness going towards spiritual consciousness, a person thinks that the jnana and expertise in jnana and expertise in jnanendriya is progress. So he says that a wise person, he doesn't run around doing this, doing that, doing that. He sits and thinks, contemplates, athato brahma jikyasa. But you see how it is? A wise person who is focusing on jnana, he is inactive. Why? Because he says, what is the point in running around so much? But on the person in the mode of passion, he is hyperactive. Hyperactive. Running, 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 running. And the person in the mode of ignorance is inactive. Why is inactive? Because the three things, he is bound to what? Nidra, alasya, pramad. Sleep, laziness and intoxication. So, material nature, goodness means one is detached from controlling material nature. Passion means one is ambitious to control one material nature. And ignorance means one is so frustrated that one can't control material nature that one goes into dreams and in dreams he imagines of controlling material nature. Intoxicated? I am the Prime Minister of India. So, actually watching television is in the mode of ignorance. Why? Because we are doing nothing. You know, some like people play video games now. They are so lazy that they can't even get out of their bed. And they are thinking they are big heroes shooting down images on the video screen. So, this is the mode of ignorance. So, the point I was making is that, see, a person in the mode of ignorance is inactive, a person in the mode of goodness is relatively inactive. So, what happens is, most people in the outside world, they are in the mode of passion, and when they are in the mode of passion, they cherish the mode of passion actually. So as devotees, when we start practicing Krishna consciousness, we are coming to the mode of goodness. But there are many other people in society who pretend to be spiritualists who are actually in the mode of ignorance. You know? And people mistake us to be them. And that's why, see, many people think that if you become spiritually minded, then that you are being irresponsible or you're not ready to work hard, that's why you run away from life or so many things people think like that. But if people actually see the lifestyle of devotees, then they will understand that devotee lifestyle is not at all lazy. You have to wake up every morning. Which person in the mode of ignorance can do that? One time we had all our devotees had come. You had come for the Nishtha camp. So one time all the devotees had come. So we had invited one. So we had done a press conference. The IIT students are practicing spiritual life. So this reporter came. And all the devotees, they asked, and these two reporters, they were asking, what did you like? So they all said, Mangal Aarti we like so much. Mangal Aarti is at 4:30. So then next morning I was just going for the Mangal Aarti and I saw both the reporters were there for Mangal Aarti. So I was amazed. I said, oh, you woke up so early and came? He says, no, we heard the Mangal Aarti was so nice. So we thought before we're going to sleep, we'll go for Mangal Aarti.
So, you know, which person in the mode of ignorance can actually wake up in the morning?
Tamastva agyana jamviddi. There is agyana over it. Mohanam sarvadehinam. Practically all living beings in the material world are bewildered. And it binds us to three things. Pramada alasya nidra. So, as devotees, you know, nidra is required. But nidra, when it becomes more than what is necessary, then that leads to bondage by the mode of ignorance. And so, as much as possible, we try to minimize the modes of ignorance and passion and situate ourselves in goodness. And especially if we are finding that lust is troubling us. Lust is born through the mode of passion. So as much as we try to cultivate the mode of goodness, we'll find that lust will decrease. So for cultivating the mode of goodness means regulated eating, regulated sleeping, and doing activities in a more regulated, peaceful way, not running around frantically. The extent we'll cultivate the mode of goodness, to that extent lust will go away. Otherwise, you know, we can even be doing devotional service in the mode of passion. And then we will find that we are doing devotional service, we are doing a lot of service, but the devotion is not coming. The material desires are not going away. Why? Because we are not cultivating the mode of goodness. Bhakti is transcendental ultimately, but we have to become transcendental by bhakti. Our consciousness has to become transcendental. So we should try to cultivate the mode of goodness as much as possible. That's why we have sadhana cards. They are very useful for bringing us to the mode of goodness. And in the next verse, Krishna just summarizes all the three. And we'll conclude with this verse. So, Sattvam sukhe sanjayati rajah karmani bharata jnanam avrityatu tamaha pramade sanjayatyuta. So, he summarizes. In goodness, one is bound by happiness, feeling of happiness. In the mode of passion, hard work. And in the mode of ignorance, by agyan, by ignorance. So actually, as far as we are concerned, you know, we are bound by all three. All three create obstacles for us. Because sometimes when we feel in goodness, we feel, oh, I am advanced devotee.
But then, after some time you wonder, what happened to my advancement? So as devotees, you know, whatever mode we are in, we try to intensify our devotional service. And
gradually we will transcend the different modes that we are in and we will come to the mode of pure goodness. Where we can taste, there we, Bhakti Samasindhu described that we come to Sthayi Bhav. Sthayi Bhav is steady ecstasy. And then once we come to Sthayi Bhav, then we can very happily advance in devotional service. Then we can actually experience Bhakti to be susukham kartumam, to be joyfully performed. So, by steady practice of devotional service, we will all come to that stage. And then we can share that happiness that of Bhakti with everyone we come in contact with. So, thank you very much. And today evening I'll be returning, so today afternoon. So thank you for your wonderful association. And it is very inspiring to see. I had come here 4 years ago and we started the preaching over there. So the fourth year batch is now passing out and they have really done an amazing job in pioneering the voice in Ramuna. And you have Jugal Kishore Prabhu, Sir Lakshan Prabhu, Randa Chitana Prabhu. They are stalwart Brahmachari preachers from Pune. And they are coming regularly here and giving you all your association, thus their association. So please take advantage of their association and march ahead in Krishna consciousness and share it with many, many others. If I have committed any offenses during the last few classes while I am here, by laziness, inattention, whatever, please forgive me for that. Vancha kalpatru dhascha kripa sindhu dhyayvacha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namah. Premina voice Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki
jai,
Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki
jai,
Gaur Premanande. Thank you very much.